I'm Mitch Albom from the Detroit Free Press.
I'm Dale Arnold from Sports Radio WEEI in Boston.
And I'm Mike Lubega from the New York Daily News, and welcome to the Friday edition, the pre-Super Bowl edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. We're very happy to have Dale Arnold with us today, who is a local legend on the radio in Boston, and he's lucky enough to be on Radio Row this week at another Patriots Super Bowl. And guys, I want to start this way because
doesn't Radio Row have a permanent New England Patriots section because of that? Like, don't you guys get like first class? Is that how it works, Dale? Are you up front?
Oh yeah, I'm right next to Moose Mountain Adventure Golf. It says Sports in America to me.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that they were treating the Patriots broadcast team right. Sorry, Mike, didn't mean to interrupt.
All right, so listen, I've been thinking all week because the Patriots are obviously trying to win their sixth Super Bowl of the Brady-Belichick era, go 6-2 in those games. And so you have to ask yourself, okay, if the Eagles are going to win the game, how are they going to win the game? And the predictable default response, guys, always is, well, you got to get in Brady's face and you got to put Brady down. Well, first of all, that's easier said than done. And to me, the real blueprint for this game doesn't come from the pressure that the Giants front four put on them in the 18-0 game. It's how that game started, Dale, and I'm sure you remember this. The Patriots didn't touch the ball until about 10 minutes into the game. The Giants only got a field goal on their first drive of the game, but Brady's first snap that day was with 5 minutes left in the first quarter. And the Eagles have got three running backs. They can do a lot of dink and dunk. And if there's a template or a blueprint for success for the Eagles on Sunday night, it starts there. You keep the ball away from touchdown Tommy.
Yeah, but how confident are you that Nick Foles can do what Eli Manning did? Because I'm not. I understand he's a nice story. Let's be honest. He's a backup quarterback. Now, if Carson Wentz was quarterbacking on Sunday, I'd be much more concerned. But let's be real here. Nick Foles is a nice story. He ain't Eli Manning, another guy who, you know, who's going to have to pay for a gold jacket if he gets one further on down in his career. So that makes me a little less nervous.
But wait, Mitch, before you jump in, let me give you some stats. I don't know if you've seen these stats. Nick Foles' stats with the Eagles against Carson Wentz's stats with the Eagles, okay? Foles' record is 19-11. Wentz is 18-11. Foles' completion percentage, 62%. Wentz's completion percentage, 62%. Touchdowns to interceptions, Foles 52-18. Wentz 49-21. Quarterback rating, 61 versus 60. All I'm saying is, it's not like, to quote my friend Dan Shaughnessy, they're running a tomato can out there against the Patriots on Sunday.
I don't disagree with you, but let's be honest. Who'd be playing quarterback on Sunday if
he was
healthy?
I understand.
Not even a question.
Statistically,
well,
the same
all right. It's not just who's playing quarterback. It's how that position is played. Mike, I agree with you that, I mean, look, let's not dismiss knocking Brady around. There's a lot to be said for knocking Brady around. It is the best way that you can beat the Patriots. But the single other biggest factor is third down. You convert your third downs. Now, you can convert your third down if you're third and four. That whole game of sort of the West Coast kind of dink and dunk passes is your best bet to keep Brady off the field, to keep them down. I'm going to add two more things that you onto your formula, Mike. One, pay attention to the last 2 minutes of the second half and don't act like, oh, good, we're going to get to go to halftime at the Super Bowl with whatever we've accomplished here so far. New England is the best in the world at scoring with less than 2 minutes to go at the end of the first half, and that frequently sets the tone for the second half as well as comes back to haunt you in terms of the points that they get. That's the second thing. And the last one, in the fourth quarter, don't act like New England is supposed to win the game. And easier said than done, too, but that's what most teams do against New England. They play a great three quarters, and they get to the fourth quarter. They go, oh, my God, that's Tom Brady over there. Let's be careful. Let's not make a mistake. However aggressive you are and whatever is working for you in the first three quarters, if you manage to be playing hard or have a lead, don't stop. Act like the game is five quarters long. And in the fifth quarter, you can pay homage to the New England Patriots. But in the fourth quarter, you better treat it like the rest of the game.
Dale, when you look back on the Jacksonville game, okay, are you going to remember best the way they played the last 9 minutes? How, I guess this is a way for me to say, how troubled are you the way they played for the first three quarters?
Yeah, it's an interesting sort of a dilemma for Bill Belichick, and he talked about it this week here in Minneapolis. It was pointed out to him by my buddy Mike Reese of ESPN Boston that, you know, he hasn't scored in the first quarter of any of his Super Bowls, and he said, thanks for pointing that out. But yeah. they really do play rope-a-dope at the beginning. They try to see what you're doing. They try to figure out, okay, what adjustments do we make here? And generally speaking, they make the right adjustments, and you start to see it in the second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter. You know, the two Giants Super Bowl games, the adjustments even then worked offensively. We always forget that Tom Brady walked off the field with his team in the lead in both of those games, and that you know, it was the defense that couldn't finish off the job. They're probably going to start slow against the Eagles. They're probably going to be looking at, okay, what do they want to do? What's the game plan? How do we adjust to it? And then they make those adjustments better than any team in the NFL.
And let me go back to the quarterback position again, because on one side you got the GOAT, and the other side you've got Nick Foles. Okay, and I agree that the Eagles look like the best team in the sport for nearly 3 months this year, with Carson Wentz quarterbacking. However, if he were in Minneapolis on Sunday night, he would be a second-year guy going up against this team, okay? And so, I obviously, the huge edge here is at the quarterback position. But there has been a huge edge at the quarterback position before, and the Patriots have played life-and-death games. And Mitch and Dale, this is a way to get around this. The Patriots never play in blowout games. The closest they ever played to a blowout Super Bowl was when they were getting their asses blown out last year before it became the greatest football game ever played. And so it's going to be a close game. All I'm thinking is it's going to be a close game because the sides are pretty much even except for Brady.
It's going to be a close
game.
If the Eagles play up to all of their levels of excellence. That's not a given in a Super Bowl. It's a given for New England because the one thing I don't worry about with New England, and I'm pretty sure everybody in New England feels the same and everybody the rest of the country, they're not going to come out and lay an egg. They're not going to come out and go, you know, we just didn't have it today. You know, we I don't know what was the matter. We didn't have – you hear that stuff all the time from teams that haven't been there before. That's not going to happen in New England. Now, it could happen to the Eagles.
Mitch, they were losing 28-3 last year. That wasn't an egg?
No, that was really good play by Atlanta. That was exceptional play by Atlanta. Let's forget that there's another team out there. Atlanta played their asses off and deserved to have
a lead in that game.
And then they lost it. New England figured out what to do against them, and then Atlanta did exactly what I just said. They started realizing, wait a minute, we're ahead of the Patriots here, and here they come. But that was not the Patriots laying an egg. The Patriots play four quarters. They don't play the same in the first quarter as they do in the third and the fourth. They have stuff that they deliberately leave out. And Dale, I'm sure you're aware of this. You cover them all the time. They deliberately leave out stuff in the first half so you don't see it. And then they spring it on you in the third and fourth quarter. So they play a complete game. Philly has to play not only complete game, but error-free. The one example I can see where this is not that close game, Mike, that New England normally plays, is if Nick Foles comes out and the stage is too big and he throws a quick pick or there's a fumble between somebody and next thing you know the Pats are up 10-0 or 13-0 and panic sets in. And that seems a lot more likely to happen to the Eagles than it's going to happen to New England.
I'll also point out one other thing. In the Bill Belichick, Tom Brady era, the three lowest scoring playoff games they've had are the two that Rob Gronkowski didn't play and the one in which he was a decoy against the Giants and was hurt. Rob Gronkowski is healthy. He is fine. He is going to be a beast. And if you ask anybody in Philadelphia, they will tell you their single biggest fear is they have no idea how they're going to stop Rob Gronkowski. I don't think they are. I think he's going to have a monster day on Sunday. And I think Brady and Gronk are going to be the single biggest thing that Philadelphia just can't overcome.
So, Dale, you think this is going to be a blowout game?
I guess you have to define blowout. We have our own definition when we do our radio show. We say it's got to be 17 points to be a blowout. So it's more than a two-score game. No, I don't think it's going to be that. But I do think it's going to be double digits. I think it's going to be like 24-14, something like that.
And by the way, here's another blueprint, template, historical frame of reference that if you're an Eagles fan, this part of the conversation has been slanted that way. It's the Giants-Bills Super Bowl in Tampa, okay? A backup quarterback, Jeff Hostetler, is the starter for the Giants, okay? And I'm not saying Jim Kelly was Tom Brady, but he's in the middle of, you know, they had just come off, I think, a 51-3 beating of the Raiders in the championship game. And what happened that day? The Giants didn't let the Bills have the ball. O.J. Anderson, they pounded him and pounded him and pounded him. And the Belichick deep, everybody's always said this, the Belichick defense that day turned out to be Parcells' off ball control offense. And again, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but if there's consolation for the Eagles going into this game, it's Super Bowls like that one.
Yeah. If you can control the clock. And here's another element. I read this in one of the pieces that they, you know, one of the umpteen pieces that they've run from former, you know, opponents, how to beat the Patriots kind of thing. But somebody said something in there that was pretty smart. Tackle inbounds. And it sounds really simple, but, you know, when Brady decides, especially if they're down and Brady is leading one of those or at the end of the first half and he's leading one of those drives where all of a sudden it's like, how did they go 80 yards in 47 seconds? Tackle inbounds, like little simple things like that. Make sure that the clock goes and that the Patriots don't get a lot of plays. Now, I know that sounds almost rudimentary, but it's really important. It's through the mirror of what you just said, Mike, in that game. And we were all at that Super Bowl. That was the Desert Storm Super Bowl. That's where they you know, basically it was like another run, another run, another run, another run. And all of a sudden the game was over. The game was over. Eat the clock, control the tempo. It's the same thing, though, when you're on defense with Brady. He'll love those little crossing patterns or those guys, you know, that just curling out to the sidelines, catches it, boom, they're out of bounds. He doesn't have to worry about 35 more seconds running off the clock. That's a simple thing, but if the Jaguars had done it a few more times, they'd probably be in the Super Bowl and not New England.
Let me follow up your point, Mitch, because there's another part of this here that you should, because to play off exactly what Mitch just said. Tom Brady is one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL this year, throwing between the hash marks. The Philadelphia Eagles defense is one of the worst in the NFL, defending between the hash marks. Exactly what Mike said is what the Patriots probably aren't going to do, which is allow the Eagles to tackle them. They're going to stay in bounds with their passing game because that's where Brady lives this year.
You know, and Mitch, see, that's why we have Dale on. That hash mark stuff. See, Mitch, did we know the hash mark stuff? No, of course we did not.
No, that was not in my prepared materials.
No, Mitch.
There was no hash mark.
You wonder why this SOB has lasted as long as he has in Boston. The it's nuggets like that. All right, Dale, let me ask you this, okay? Because Mitch and I have been going back and forth on this for a couple of weeks. Mitch acts like Brady has spent most of his career, other than throwing to Gronk, throwing to like guys like me and Mitch, okay? I think Welker and Edelman and Troy Brown and Deion Branch and now even Brandon Cooks are better than that, okay? How much credit do you give Brady for making guys like that, or are we too often selling the receivers he's had short, even though a lot of them have been short?
Troy Brown once said to me, just because you don't know their name doesn't mean they can't play. And he gets real offended at the idea that Brady hasn't had a bunch of weapons around him. But with all due respect to my friend Troy Brown, when his career is over, Tom Brady will have played. He will have played with two Hall of Fame skill position guys. One is Randy Moss, and he only played with him for a couple of years. And one is Rob Gronkowski.
Well, wait, Dale, you don't think Welker? You don't think Welker might end up in the Hall of Fame someday?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I mean, I know what those slot receivers are like, and they don't get the love that they should. He was great. He really was. And Julian Edelman is great. He really is. But Hall of Fame, I think there's only going to be two guys.
Well, you know how I feel, Mike, because you introduced the segment that way.
Yeah, I know.
And Randy Moss was there 1 year, so I don't really count. Randy Moss was like a visiting professor. Well, I should never use that in the same sense as with Randy Moss, but you know what I mean. But he was there for a year, and then he moved on. Welker. Who were some of the other guys that were on there? You wouldn't have Brandon Merriweather, Givens. A lot of these guys. I'm not saying they're bad football players, Mike. I'm saying that this was never Troy Aikman with Emmitt Smith with Michael Irvin. Okay, there's never been a trio like that. This wasn't even Matthew Stafford with Calvin Johnson. He just has elevated these guys. Now, would Gronkowski be as great a tight end with another team? I don't think so. Because I think they have worked out a system that perfectly elevates both Brady and Gronkowski's game to one another. I don't know that any other quarterback is as capable of finding him perfectly over the middle as Brady is, and that's what makes Gronkowski great. Would he be a star? Yeah, he'd be a star. Would he be, like, irreplaceable with another team? I don't think so. I just think Brady makes them that much better.
I'll disagree with you on Gronk. Gronk is a beast.
Okay, let me ask you two Wes Welker haters a question, okay?
Ow!
I hate him.
How many guys who have caught 100 passes in five or more seasons aren't going to end up in the Hall of Fame? He caught 100 passes five different times. He's better than you think he is.
Listen, I love the guy. He's really good, and if he had made one catch against the Giants, they'd have another Super Bowl in their hands.
You are
permanently punished in New England. I have something that I've been curious about for someone who covers New England all the time, like you do, Dale. What do you feel that the media there has had to get used to that perhaps other cities don't have to deal with their football team? With the long reign of Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, two people who, from the outside to me, never are bested by the media. They always have an answer, a way around it, a way of hiding. They have their supporters. They, of course, have had this kind of success that they've had, so they get that kind of support. And they never seem forthcoming. They never, the closest to emotion that we've seen of Tom Brady is when he went on, I think it was your radio station, and said, he was angry about his daughter being called something. But for the most part, he's very Michael Jordan-esque about, not saying anything too much. So what is it like day to day to have to deal with this team in terms of trying to get any real news or information out of them?
I do Bill Belichick's radio show every Monday, and you will never, ever get Bill Belichick off his spot. Members of the media try, especially Super Bowl week. They try to push him, they try to get him to step off the spot and say something emotional. It ain't going to happen. He is the most disciplined person I've ever met, and I don't know if that rubbed off on Tom or if Tom had that in him to begin with, but he's very much like Belichick in that regard. Now, interestingly enough, and I say this and people don't believe it, the minute the microphones are off, when I do the Monday radio hit with Belichick, he's a totally different guy. How are the Bruins doing? Hey, what's going on with the power play? He's a big hockey fan, by the way. He'll smile, he'll talk, he'll joke. But the minute he steps in front of those microphones and in front of those cameras, this shield comes down. Now, fans here have gotten used to it, and more than getting used to it, guys, they like it. They admire it. They like to see Belichick toy with members of the media. They laugh about it. He's now become even more popular with fans because he treats people like us like dirt.
Well, Dale, and I've known him since he was an assistant coach, since he was top sergeant for Parcells. I like him. I don't have to cover him, but I like him. And I've told Mitch this story before. A couple years ago when Peyton came into Jersey to play the Seahawks for the Super Bowl, I called up Stacey and I said, listen, I want to just – everybody talks about Manning versus Brady. I said, it's not Manning versus Brady. It's Manning versus Belichick. That was the rivalry. And I said, I just want Bill to talk about that. And Dale, we were on the phone for about 45 minutes that day. and all of the fun in him and all of the football and Peyton, he'll have one cadence against the Chargers, and then 3 weeks later the same play, same formation, and all of that stuff comes out of him. I always found him fun to talk to, and again, having said that, I'd hate to have to cover him on a daily basis.
Do you think, Dale, that there's any chance, somebody bet me this, actually offered, like, I'll bet you $10 that this happened, that if he wins this Super Bowl, he quits?
No, not at all. I talked to him about it both on and off the air. So our radio station just signed a multi-year extension for the Monday Brady and Belichick interviews. And when I said it on the air, I said, we've got a contract extension here. And he sort of smiled. He says, I hope I'm still here. And then he started laughing. I said, have you got news to break? He said, no. He said, and he was joking about it. He loves what he's doing. He's a football coach. He's really good at it. Better at it than anybody who's ever done the job before. Why the hell would he step away from this? I know he's got the $10 million compound.
The only reason is the rumors that we're hearing. The only reason is the rumors that we're hearing that him and Kraft are at odds, him and Brady are at odds. He traded Jimmy Garoppolo basically out of spite because he was forced to. I mean, you've read the same stuff that we've read. You don't think that there's a point where he would get fed up with that and say, I don't need this, I can be a legend wherever I want to go?
He could. He's also got a multi-year contract, and I don't think Robert Kraft would let him just step away and go become a legend again in New York or wherever. No, I just think he's going to be here. He's got everything he'd ever want here. He's got an owner who lets him do what he wants, who lets him run this thing, really with very little, if any, oversight. And despite the Seth Wickersham piece, which I think is completely overblown, in fact, I've even heard that Wickersham wishes he could walk back the mandate word. That there was a mandate to trade Garoppolo. There wasn't. There wasn't a mandate. It was what Belichick, as always, thought was best for the team at the time.
But, Dale, all right, explain this to me. And, again, because I have tried to understand this, and I completely agree with you. I don't think Belichick's going anywhere. I wrote that at when the dumb Giants stuff started. And it's my theory. Don't ever give up the best job you're ever going to have. Rick Pitino did it at Kentucky. You can go at Kentucky. You can go through it, okay? You mean to tell me that if he thought it was in the best interest of the planet, okay, a second-round draft choice was the best he could do for a guy who's going to be a transformational player in San Francisco for about the next 10 years?
Fellas, look at the market out there. Look what quarterbacks bring. I mean, they had Matt Castle. They franchised him, traded him to Kansas City. They had to throw in Mike Vrabel, and got a second-round draft pick for him. And Matt Castle had a much larger NFL resume to his credit than Jimmy Garoppolo has. We've turned Jimmy Garoppolo into slinging Sammy Ball here for some reason. I like the kid. I think he's got a pretty good future in front of him here, but I don't know where this has come up that all of a sudden we think he's going to be the next Tom Brady.
Dale, hold on a second. I agree that nobody's turning him into slinging Sammy Ball, but did you see the 49ers over the first 9 or 10 weeks of the season? Those games down the stretch didn't win themselves.
Interestingly enough, though, and I'll raise your ante in this regard. Yes, I did see the games that the 49ers had at the early part of the season. They were losing by 2 points, 3 points, 5 points. They were like right there and couldn't get over the hump. They got improved quarterback play from Garoppolo that let them get over the hump, and I give them all the credit in the world for that. They weren't as far away early in the season as the record would indicate.
See, yeah,
you're not addressing the elephant in the room on the thing. Why do you have to deal him away? I mean, Brady is 40 years old. Quarterbacks do get hurt. He's not made out of kryptonite.
Yes.
And quarterbacks get hurt. Why wouldn't you want Jimmy Garoppolo on your roster? No matter what you think of him relative to Tom Brady, he's still better than Hoyer.
It just it never made sense to me that you were going to have both of those guys here. At the end of the season, your choices, because he would not sign a long-term extension here for, you know, good money, but not over-the-moon money. You were going to have to franchise him, which means you were going to pay your backup quarterback, your clipboard holder, $24, $25 million when your starting quarterback, your future Hall of Famer, was going to make $20 million. It never made sense to me you were going to tie up $46 million in one position on one team.
Well, Mitch, you hear this. He hates Welker and he hates Garoppolo. Okay, now, before Big Dale did.
Boy, one catch. Trump. All I asked for was one catch from Welker.
No. Mitch is, after 28 years, Mitch is used to this by now. Okay, let's just, before we get off the subject of quarterbacks, this is a good segue. The Redskins signed Alex Smith this week. Kirk Cousins is now in play. I don't think either one of them is going to Canton. I mean, they can go to Canton, Dale. They can go to Canton.
And drive
but
to Canton.
They can drive. They can buy a ticket like everybody else. How desirable do you believe Cousins is going to be? I know the Jets need a quarterback. Elway needs a quarterback. The Browns need a quarterback. Who knows? Maybe the Vikings may decide they need a quarterback. How good, both of you guys, how good do you think Kirk Cousins really is?
There is something. Look, I've known Kirk Cousins since he played at Michigan State. You never find a better guy. You know, I mean, he's religious, and some people, you know, like that, and some people don't. But as a quality person, he's going to be good in your locker room. He's going to be good in your community. He is under 30 years old. He shows a lot of flashes of excellence. There is something going on in the NFL about Kirk Cousins, or at least in Washington, that I'm not getting. Now maybe, you know, it's like, yeah, but when you get down the stretch, he's not a fourth quarter guy, or he won't. I don't know what it is, but if you just look at his numbers, if you just look at his performance, honestly, I don't think a quarterback this good and this accomplished who is under 30, remember, he's under 30, has become available like this since it's been a long time. I mean, these guys are usually locked up. Maybe Drew Brees when he left the Chargers, but you know, I think he's an exceptional talent. And I'm just getting the feeling that there's something that's going around the NFL, like, yeah, but with him, that people aren't immediately just salivating. Now, I know Von Miller thinks he's fantastic. He came out and said, I want him on the Broncos. But I don't know. Don't you, Dale, you get a sense that there's something more to the Kirk Cousins thing that has kept Washington from locking on to him, and yet all of a sudden they're ready to lock on to Alex Smith for a long-term deal?
It's the weirdness season in the NFL. It is the most important position. It's the hardest position to fill. Alex Smith. Now think about this. Alex Smith got $71 million guaranteed. Stop the presses. Alex Smith got $71 million guaranteed. Now, that means either the New York Jets or the Cleveland Browns are going to do something exceptionally stupid, and they're going to guarantee Kirk Cousins even more than that. They're going to guarantee him $80, $85, $90 million, whatever the number is, and it's going to fail because he's not a franchise quarterback. They think that if you pay him like a franchise quarterback, he then becomes that. Alex Smith isn't. He got overpaid. Kirk Cousins isn't. He's about to get overpaid to a huge degree. It's the position that holds franchises hostage, and that's what's happening in the NFL right now.
All right, but what makes you say that he's not a franchise quarterback, though? What is it about him that you don't like? What is it about him that you think keeps him from being on that podium?
Mitch, it's exactly what you just said. You know, there's always that yeah, but with him. There's always that yeah, but. There's something that isn't there. When you have a franchise quarterback, and you guys know this, when you have it, you see it, you know it.
You're right.
It's the Supreme Court definition of pornography. I know it when I see it. And with a franchise quarterback, you know it when you see it. You don't see it with either of those two guys.
Dale, I agree with you. Mitch, I think he's a very good quarterback. But famously, a few years ago, my friend Michael Kay asked Eli one time, okay, do you think you're an elite quarterback? Well, obviously, Eli was going to say yes. When you watch Kirk Cousins play, and I know you know him, when you watch him, okay, you think he's one of the top guys in the league?
Well, it depends on where you're stretching the top. If you're including, if the top means Brady and Rodgers and, you know, no, absolutely not. Is he in the top 10? Well, maybe at the bottom of the top 10. Is he in the top 15? Yeah, I think he's in the top 15.
But what you just said, are you going to pay what this guy's going to make to a guy who's at the bottom of the top 10?
Well, I mean, Dale talks about 70, 80 million like it's real money. I mean, come on. I know what they pay in radio in Boston. These are going rates. I mean, this is not, that's what you pay for a quarterback. Now, everyone's not going to get a Brady or a Rodgers. They're not out there. But He is, I mean, he's I'm looking at his stats from the last 4 years. He's consistently close to 100 quarterback rating. His touchdowns and interceptions are in the, you know, 27, 13, 25, 12, 29, and 11 range. He hits 65, 67, 69% of his passes. These are good indicator numbers, unless he's somehow just a choker in the fourth quarter, which I have seen him lead fourth quarter comebacks. I've seen him win games at the end. I mean, there's only a handful of Brady's and Rodgers's out there. Everybody else in the middle, is he almost as good as Matthew Stafford? I mean, look, Matthew Stafford's the highest paid player in the NFL. So you're talking about $70 or $80 million as if how could you pay that? But I mean, when you're paying Stafford what you're paying him, and the average is close to $30 million now for a quarterback, that's not that much money for a guy who has proven himself and is still young and maybe still has an upside in the NFL. I don't get
Mitch,
the kind of hate at Kirk Cousins. People are higher on Jimmy Garoppolo than they are on Kirk Cousins. Jimmy Garoppolo, who's played, you know, 4 or 5 games and been a backup, than they are on Kirk Cousins. I don't get it.
Mitch, let's play the quarterback telephone game, okay? Because the Kansas City Chiefs decided Alex Smith isn't good enough to be our quarterback anymore. So the Washington Redskins say, we'll take him because Kirk Cousins isn't good enough to be our quarterback anymore. It's the quarterback telephone game. Where by the time you get to the end, all of a sudden, Brian Hoyer becomes the next best thing to Aaron Rodgers.
All right. I'm pretty sure that's never going to happen, actually. But right. I get the metaphor.
We'll bring Professor Arnold's quarterback tutorial to an end now. And before we move on to the NBA, we all live busy lives, and unfortunately, there's not enough hours in the day to get everything done. Freshly is the easiest and most convenient way to eat healthy, no matter what life throws your way. No more worrying about having to figure out, especially at the Mall of America, for example, what's for dinner, and especially no mess to clean up after. You've heard me talk about this before. I think I got another shipment on the way. Shepherd's pie is my favorite. I can't explain to you. It makes me feel more British. Their menu is created by chefs for people who want to eat healthy but are living busy lives like Dale Arnold living in the Arctic right now and don't always have the time to do shopping, cooking, or cleaning. The best part about Freshly is the number of comfort meals they currently have that are also super healthy, like the buffalo chicken or the chicken parm. Customize your weekly meals from their constantly changing, rotating menu of more than 30 chef-crafted options. There's no weekly commitment, so you can only get deliveries when you want them. Every single meal comes with a detailed and easy-to-read overview of all each ingredient featured in the meal. Let me tell you, there's nothing better than knowing that no matter what happens in my daily life, that I have a chef-cooked dinner waiting for me at home. Check out this week's menu created by Freshly Chefs and get $25 off your first order of 6 chef-cooked dinners plus free shipping by going to freshly.com/sportsreporters. You'll feel so relieved to come home. So Dale could buy this for the people having the pep rally in back of them to a chef-cooked meal every night with Freshly. That's freshly.com/sportsreporters for $25 off your first order. Order today to see what life's like when you no longer have to think about dinner, or you're like Mitch Albom, thinking he's got a brand new, spanking new basketball star in Detroit named Blake Griffin.
We're going to buy Blake Griffin a couple of Freshlies because he brought a fresh new attitude to the team last night when he played. He forgot his jersey. He left it in the locker room and came out in a T-shirt, so he had to start on the bench in the second half. But I'm sure he'll get over that. This to me was very, very interesting, not just because it happened in my backyard. I'm looking at it from a global point of view in the NBA. Here you had a Pistons team that defined mediocrity. They were never bad enough to get the number one draft pick or high up in the lottery, never good enough in the last few years to even make the playoffs. If they did make the playoffs over the course of the last decade, they were out in the first round. They were stuck in that awful middle in the NBA where you can't get better because you're not bad enough, and yet, you know, there's no fan interest. They really didn't have a superstar. The closest thing they had was Andre Drummond, and Andre Drummond's an excellent player, but he doesn't cut a superstar figure. And all of a sudden, Blake Griffin becomes expendable because the Clippers are breaking up the Clippers after Chris Paul took off, and they're deciding, all right, we're going to get rid of everybody. And Stan Van Gundy decides And you can argue, you know, maybe he did this because he wanted to fill the arena. Maybe he did it because his contract is getting a little long in the tooth and he needs it. But his argument, what he said out loud was, when you get a chance to get a superstar in this league, you have to take it. You have to build from there. And as I have thought about this, and I say, well, the Pistons weren't going to get any better with draft picks because they were going to be in the middle again. And they weren't going to get any better with free agency because who wants to come to Detroit when you're mediocre like that? But now all of a sudden they've got Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond, and it seems to me, guys, that this is the new way that you build teams in the NBA. You put a superstar someplace, and then you try to get his friends to come and play with him, you know, or guys who say, well, they got one superstar there, and you build like on threes. Instead of building a whole roster, if I can get three superstars, I'll have a chance. And
but,
maybe there's something to what Stan
Mitch,
Van Gundy said.
Mitch, you know that we sometimes disagree about this. Dale, you'll be shocked that Mitch and I occasionally do. You're throwing the word superstar.
No way.
You're throwing the word superstar around again. And again, I'll apply the it factor thinking to Blake Griffin that Dale was just applying to quarterbacks. Dale, I'll ask you this. When you look at Blake Griffin, you're seeing an NBA star without question. Are you seeing a superstar?
Here's the problem. He signs a $171 million contract extension last July. He, on average, he makes over $34 million a year. Second right now in the NBA, only to Steph Curry. That means you think he's one of the best players in the NBA, and I've never felt that way. I think that the Clippers dealt him away because they're trying to clear the decks and go all out to try to get LeBron James there next summer, and that's what they're trying to set up here. And Blake Griffin becomes a casualty of that. I think he's a really, really good player.
Me too.
$34 million is, to you know, Mitch's phrase, it's funny money, and it's not my money, and I understand that. But the contract that he signed means he's got to be one of the best players in the NBA, and I've never felt he is.
No, it doesn't, though. Here's where I disagree with you, Dale. The money doesn't have to mean he's one of the best players in the NBA. I think Stan Van Gundy is fully aware that he is not the Blake Griffin that he used to be and that he's not worth this money. But you know what? That's the price of admission. When you are locked out, like teams like the Pistons are, locked out of the Cleveland, Golden State, San Antonio triumvirate, you know, or what Houston and Denver has managed to do, Oklahoma City, how do you play in the game? How do you get in? So you have to overpay. And is Blake Griffin the best of the suit? No, but those guys aren't going to become available. You know, they're not going to. Chris Paul wasn't going to come to the Pistons, and neither were any of the other guys who jumped ship. And when Kevin Durant decided to get out of Oklahoma City, he didn't even consider. They made plays for every one of these guys, every one of them, including LeBron James. They made plays for all of them. They all turned him down. So when you keep getting turned down by the pretty girls, you start saying, "Well, okay, the prettiest girls aren't going to go out with me, but I still need a date for the prom." And this is the price of admission. Now, maybe if Blake Griffin can stay healthy, he can attract another superstar to come. Somehow they clear the roster, and that's how they. Otherwise, what were the Pistons going to do, Mike?
No, Mitch, you're not hearing me. I would have made this trade, okay? I would have made this trade. I was quibbling with the idea that he's a superstar, and you just said if he can stay healthy. Well, that is a if as big as his damn contract, because you know how many times he's played 80 games in his career? Three times. And let me give you the most recent season, 34 games, 61 games, 35 games, 67 games. You're placing a big bet on a guy who has had more and more trouble as he's gotten deeper into his career staying on the court. Mitch, I would have made the trade. All the thinking, yes, if he's available and you have a chance to get out of being stuck in the middle, you make this the move that Stan made, okay? I'm just saying, I don't think he's one of the best players in the league. That's where we disagree, that's all.
Yeah, well, I don't. I don't think he is.
Your logic sort of sounded to me like the old country western song, "The Girls All Look Prettier at Closing Time." It's like, we can't get the prom date, so we're going to go get Blake Griffin because, I know he's overpriced. I know he's not that good, but he's better than what we got. Boy, that's a tough way to run a business, though, isn't it?
Dale, do you notice that, you give us all that hash marks information, and what has Mitch given us? Girls going to the prom. Okay, that's what Mitch gave us today. And by the way,
both are valuable in a sports discussion.
Okay, but wait a minute. I will tell you, Dale, playing off of what you just said, when Ed Marinaro had just come out of Cornell and nearly won the Heisman Trophy, he's out running around Manhattan one night with J.W. Namath, okay? And what you just said is what happened, because it became clear to Mr. Marinaro that Mr. Namath was going to leave with someone less than what Ed had always imagined. And he asked Joe about it at one point, and Joe looked at him very seriously. He said, Ed, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and Miss America is not coming in.
I have another NBA thing to bring up, but before we do, we all know the importance of getting a good night's sleep, right? Dale has probably not had one in a week out there in Minneapolis. Well, folks, let us tell you about Mattress Firm. And we'll keep the ball rolling, shall we? The base for this argument is simple. Your bed budget can go further when you're shopping at America's Neighborhood Mattress Store. It's a true home run, and you'll have a ball. Notice how many baseball references I'm making here. They're the head coaches when it comes to mattress experience. But know this, they're more than just mattress experts. They have a game plan that helps you transform your mattress into a bed. From adjustable bases and sheets to headboards and bedroom decor, they have you literally and figuratively covered up like your favorite cornerback. Now I went to football. Go to mattressfirm.com/podcast to see what deals are happening as we're speaking right now. They even offer you a 120-night sleep trial to ensure perfection and a 120-night low-price guarantee so you know you paid the perfect price. That's a 1-2 punch, a knockout, if you will. Score big with a perfect bed. Head to mattressfirm.com/podcast, and you'll get the lowdown on how you can monumentally improve your sleep today, tonight, and tomorrow. If you don't think that Blake Griffin going to the Pistons is going to change things much, you probably have very little regard for the rumor or story or whisper, or I don't even know how it got started, that LeBron James would listen to the Golden State Warriors if they wanted to talk to him about joining their already stuffed squad of, and I can use the word superstars, when he becomes a free agent. Do any of us think that there is any validity to this whatsoever?
I don't. I don't. I took it about as seriously. Mitch, I took it about as seriously, and Dale, I took it as seriously as I did the idea that Bill Belichick was going to end up with the New York Giants after Seth Wickersham's story comes out. No, he's not going to go to Golden State. He's not. He can't make the... There's a couple of can't-make moves, and that's one of them for him. I personally think, as we watch this thing crumble in Cleveland, that he is going to end up with either the L.A. Clippers next year or the Los Angeles Lakers.
Yeah, and I also think that if there's one thing that he's probably concerned about, it's legacy, and he will take a blowtorch to his legacy if he ended up going to the Golden State Warriors. He'd already done one of these Lego build a championship situations in Miami. He went back and brought a championship to the land. Well, he will take a blowtorch to all of that if he tries to go connect up with Steph Curry or whatever players will be left after they try to pay him a max contract. No, I didn't put any validity to it, and neither does he.
Well, let me be the contrarian here, not because I think this is, because I don't think it's going to happen. But why exactly, Dale, would he do a blowtorch to his legacy, but Kevin Durant wouldn't? I mean, you know, if the operative thing in the NBA is go where the superstars are and win, Kevin Durant not only didn't blowtorch his legacy, except perhaps in Oklahoma City, but he was celebrated, won the MVP, and he's everybody's favorite player now. Why is there a different standard for LeBron James if he wants to go play with all the best guys?
Well, because you don't take two pretty girls to the prom.
Three times.
You just can't take
ball. Now we're back to the prom again.
Mitch, I'm trying to put this in a framework that you clearly will embrace and understand.
Okay.
But Mitch, you can't take all the pretty girls in class to the prom. And if you're him and you fancy yourself, if not the greatest of all time, the greatest of this time in sports, that as great as Kevin Durant is, nobody's ever looked at him the way people look at LeBron. You can't then go join that AAU team. You just can't. And do I think he's got one more move in him? I think he has one more move in him. I don't know how he's going to evaluate this stuff. I don't think he's going to go to New York, for example. They actually have a nice team in Miami. He could make one more move there. But I just have a feeling that the left coast, Mitch, I have no evidence of this. I'm just inferring. I just have a feeling he might have a West Coast move in him.
All right. Before we get to our parting shots, Michael, you've got one more thing to say, right?
Oh, yes. Well, yeah, do I ever. Pitney Bowes is the industry. You listen up now, Arnold. Pitney Bowes is the industry leader in mailing and shipping solutions. No matter what you send or how often, Pitney Bowes has the solution that precisely fits your needs. For example, Dale, getting out of Minnesota as soon as you can after the game. Way, print, mail, and save. You and your business will save time and money when you print postage, and you won't need to wait in line at the post office anymore. You also won't need to worry about putting the correct amount of postage on your letter or package. Effective January 21st of this year, just a couple weeks ago, USPS mailing and shipping costs went up, okay? But you'll save 3 cents per letter with a Pitney Bowes solution. Those discounts are simply not available at the post office. Beat the increase. Whether you're sending a package or a letter, you'll be paying less and saving money if you're using a Pitney Bowes sending solution. Plans start at just $5 per month. And for our listeners, Pitney Bowes is offering a free trial, so you're sure to find the right solution for you. Visit pb.com/sportsreporters to learn more and to try it for free. Terms apply. See site for details. That is pb.com/sportsreporters. And we thank Pitney Bowes for sponsoring our podcast. And remember, when you support our sponsors, you help make this podcast possible. Okay, it's time for our parting shots. And I know you're excited, Arnold, because how many years did you watch us give parting shots on the Sports Reporters television show? How many years did you do that, Dale? How many?
All of them.
All of the years.
Okay, listen.
Every single
all
one.
Of the years.
Well, there is.
Well, I think Dale should go first. Then.
All right, Dale.
Give him this honor.
Dale, you go first.
All right, my parting shot is, because the Patriots are a really good football team, I get the opportunity to go to a lot of Super Bowls, which means I get to be at a lot of Radio Rows. Rarely, though, have I had the opportunity to sit in a million-square-foot mall next to a Dora the Explorer Ferris wheel at what I like to call the Tower of Babel, better known as Radio Row. There is a different feel, though, to this than anything I've ever been in. It started this week with a colleague at my radio station using a disparaging term to refer to the 5-year-old daughter of the quarterback of the New England Patriots. He got, for his troubles, an indefinite suspension. It continued on with, believe it or not, a fight on Radio Row between two all-sports stations from the city of Houston. That resulted in one of the all-sports stations getting booted off Radio Row and sent home. What the hell are we doing here? We have turned this into Vince McMahon and the WWE. Football means nothing. I want Sweet Jesus to open up over here, the new ice cream store, and it's not going to open until the spring. How am I supposed to continue to go on here at the Mall of America? I just want to go home.
Arnold, let me tell you something. You have a seat on this podcast whenever you want one. Okay, listen. There's
really?
There's nothing that gets your blood racing in America other than maybe Dale being at Radio Row, and not just in American sports, than finding out about what I call rich guy problems. Now, my pal Mark Leibovich from the New York Times, who's writing a book about the NFL, had a piece in the Times this week about how Arthur Blank, the owner of the Falcons, was chafed at his buddy Bob Kraft because the Patriots, hold on to your jewels, put 283 diamonds in their latest Super Bowl rings to reflect the fact that they did come from 28-3 down to beat the Falcons a year ago in Houston. Quote, "I said to Robert, you didn't have to do that 28-3 thing in the ring," Blanks told the Times. "It kind of pissed me off." Well, guys, there you have it. One billionaire with a case of hurt feelings towards another one because of the amount of diamonds in another vulgar sport championship sports ring. You know that gotta have a ring culture that we have in modern sports, right? Arthur Blank just doesn't want it to be that ring.
After a wild finish to the Denver-Oklahoma City game Thursday night, Russell Westbrook was walking off the court when a fan jumped out in front of him and started screaming. A Denver fan. Let me describe this fan. A grown man with a backwards baseball cap screaming like he just killed a wild boar in the caveman days. Not surprisingly, Westbrook shoved the guy away from him. Now, in some modern media circles, that would have been the story. Westbrook shoves fan. A lawsuit might ensue. Westbrook would be told he must control himself. Well, that hasn't happened yet, and in my book, it shouldn't happen. Westbrook actually showed restraint only shoving this guy away from him. What gives this goofball or others who do the same the right to step on a court at all, let alone scream in the face of a player? This sense of, yeah, I just did it, mystifies me. You're a fan. All you did was watch. When Westbrook pushed the guy away, he continued to roar and clapped his hands as if he just pulled off something special. You did, sir. You proved you are a very special idiot. Before we wrap up our show here, we should get a Super Bowl prediction from the three of us, just so that we're on the record so we can make fun of it on Monday morning. Dale, you're our guest. Go first.
I'm going to I gave this score at the beginning of the week. I'm going to stick with it. Patriots 24-14. Tom Brady's sixth Super Bowl championship. Bill Belichick cements his legacy as the greatest coach in the history of the sport, if not sports. So 24-14.
27-23 Patriots. And again, Mitch, we've been talking about this game for a couple of weeks now. I give you that score, and if they get blown out, you can have fun with me on Monday. I think the Eagles have a great chance to win this game.
I'll go with the Patriots as well. A little lower scoring than that, though. I'll take a 21-13 victory. That obviously doesn't qualify as a blowout, but all of us going with the Patriots to win it. So quite naturally, the Eagles will win by 10, and we'll be talking about that on Monday morning. Tune in to see if that happens. And, in fact, it's even better than tuning in, Dale, because it's not like radio where you got to be somewhere at any one given time. You can download the podcast and listen to it at your convenience. And you can do it at anywhere on Apple, iTunes, anywhere you get your favorite podcasts. And we're very glad to have you join us, Dale. Thank you very much. This was a pleasure. Come back and join us anytime.
Guys, thanks for the invitation. It was a real treat for me, too, and I appreciate it.
Stay low on Radio Row. And until we see you on Monday with Dale Arnold and Mike Lupica, this is Mitch Albom saying have a terrific Super Bowl weekend.